Welcome to another episode of Before You Kill Yourself with your host, Leo Flowers. I am Leo Flowers. Today's guest is Arnita Craighead. She is the Chief Empowerment Officer at The Motivating Factor. She is here to share her experience in mental resilience, empowerment strategies, and inspirational leadership that will be of value to you as you navigate your day, your week, your month, and your years. Welcome to the episode, Arnita Craighead.
Thank you.
Thank you for being here. Before the episode, I go through a series of questions with all my guests. And one of the things you said yes to, before we get into what you do and what your purpose is as a motivated, a chief empowerment officer, you talked about struggling with suicidal ideations. Can you talk to us about that?
Sure. So previously there was a time in my life where I got tired, but it wasn't just the physical tired. It was the everything tired. It was the physical tired, the mentally tired, the emotionally tired, just drained. And I really felt like I had no purpose. And I felt like I had no peace because everything, and I do mean everything, from the job to the finances to the relationships, which were family and friends and significant other, medical issue, everything was just blowing up at one point. And I was like, you know what? I just cannot deal. I felt overwhelmed and I felt like I could get no peace. And the only way that I could think of to finally get some peace was to just leave, to leave life. I was like, you know what? If I'm not here anymore, I don't have to have my feelings hurt emotionally. I don't have to deal with people betraying me. I don't have to deal with my job just going crazy and me feeling like I can't do my job. And of course, we have jobs to do what? Pay bills. So if your job is blowing up, you're starting to feel like my finances are in a whirlwind. And I said, you know what? I just can't do it anymore. And I was in pain, but I wasn't in physical pain. I was in a lot of emotional and mental pain, and I could not make it stop. So I said, you know what? Life is going to go on without me. So why don't I just leave? And I was ready to go. And what I did is I actually went, I was like, okay, what's going to be the easiest? What's going to be the quickest? And I literally went through the motions. I was like, okay, so, you know, slit wrist, and this is just being real, just let me get a knife. And then I was like, yeah, but you know, somebody's going to come and find me. In the midst of all this pain, I'm still thinking of other people, which sounds crazy, but you do, right? So I was like, it's going to be bloody everywhere. Somebody's going to have to clean it up and everything. And it may take a little bit too long and it may hurt. And then I said, okay, well, I was living near water at the time. I was living in Virginia. And I said, I could just drive my car off the bridge. But then I said, you know, drowning might be a little extra. It might take a little bit too long and it might be painful too. And finally, I said, why don't I just take some pills and go to sleep? You know what? I can go to sleep and I just won't wake up. Then it won't hurt. And so I made all the preparations and everything. And I had the pills on the countertop and I was just ready to shut it down and leave. And the next question is usually what stopped you. I actually had a conversation. A friend of mine actually called me and I really wasn't talking to anybody, but for some reason, I talked to her this day and then we got off the phone. I said, you know, I'm tired. I need to lay down and take a nap. And she said, I didn't sound right. And she called me back and I did not answer the phone. And she, even though she lived in another state, she called the police. And probably about 10 minutes after I got off the phone with her, they were banging on my door. And that is what stopped it, because they came in, they saw the pills and they were like, okay, are you okay? Do we need to take you to the hospital? What's going on? And all of that. And at first I was angry. I was really angry because I was like, can everybody just leave me alone? Leave me alone. I am trying. Because then I still felt like I was like, I'm trying to get to some peace. And here y'all are disturbing the peace that I'm trying to get to. But they didn't let me go. And I actually had to call somebody that I didn't want to call to have them come over. And, you know, they agreed to stay. And that was kind of the start of, that was, it wasn't the end of suicidal ideation, but that was the start of me starting to slowly, very slowly make my trek back to being and feeling normal.
Talk to me about that moment of anger. You got the pills laid out. You're like, man, I'm maybe like 10 minutes away from feeling the peace that I want to feel. Maybe an hour. It depends on the dosage and the pills. I don't know. It could be Flintstone vitamins you got laid out. But and then the police come banging on the door. I'm assuming that the neighbors can hear this. The neighbors can see this. So there's maybe some embarrassment with cops knocking on my door. I don't know what your living situation is. But that anger, talk to me about the anger. What were you angry about in that situation besides the trying to get to some peace?
I was angry that my friend at the time had called the police. I kind of felt like, why couldn't you just let me be? Why did you have to call the police? Okay, maybe I didn't sound right to you, but why did you call them? That was one. Number two, you putting somebody else in my business. That was a big one. I was angry because somebody else was in my business. And three, I was ready to lay down and go to sleep. So I was angry that you banging on the door and you are disturbing me. I felt like once I got out the phone with her, I finally had a moment to just breathe for a second. So I actually wasn't concerned about the neighbors. I wasn't thinking about anybody else. I was just angry because once the police came, I knew that it would be a while before I had some peace. And I was like, okay, this is not good. And I was angry about what could possibly happen because the police were at my door.
Arnita, talk to me about the number of times in your life where you thought you were about to settle into peace. Whether that was, I thought, you know, I was done for the day. I thought I was going to be able to go to bed right now. And then it was disturbed. Is that a reoccurring theme through your life? Where I thought I was done with the dishes, and here you come with two more dishes, and you see I'm out here rinsing the sink kind of thing.
I won't say it's a reoccurring thing, but I will say it has happened a number of times. And what you said, you know, you said something as simple as the dishes, because it can be work where you're like, okay, I feel like I've gotten this client settled. And then here they come. Oh, you know what? I need something else. Or I've got another question. You know, you had a colleague. So it could be work where it's family and like, you know, I'm thinking that maybe we ought to do this. I know we just did this for Thanksgiving, but maybe we ought to do this for Christmas. You know, it can be anything. So I won't say it's a recurring thing on a regular basis, like it's every day. But I think it's different now. Let me say this. I used to feel like it happened more often. Now I don't feel like it happens, even if somebody does something, because I look at peace a little bit differently. So it's about not allowing somebody to disturb your peace. And that's the thing that I work on with people. It's like, you know, how do you find your peace? What does that peace look like? And it can be different for different people. So it's about not allowing people, because I've had people that are still in my life, or I have people who are still in my life. And there were times, you know, I was like, oh my goodness, I cannot get any peace being around you. But now I'm different. And I think that's the biggest thing. I'm not trying to change somebody else. I'm not trying to get them to be different. It's about finding that peace, those little, for some people, it's just a snippet, but it's about finding those little snippets or particles of peace within me and doing what I need to do. So I'll say it's different now.
Now, what does that look like? Because what came up for me as we were talking about this was the ability to set boundaries, the ability to say no, the ability to be like, that doesn't work for me right now. Is that Absolutely. Something that you are practicing more of and recognizing that helps to bring you peace?
Absolutely. That is definitely one of the things, because no is a complete sentence. You don't owe anybody any explanations. I think as we grow up, you know, you do something, a kid does something wrong. And what does the parent do? Tell me why you did that. So the child is used to explaining that to a parent. Depending on what career you're in, you may have to explain something to a client or to management. But when it comes to your own life, an explanation is not always necessary. So no is a complete sentence. So that is something for me. And people will say, well, why? And I will sometimes just look at them and they're like, okay. And then, like you said, boundaries are a big part of that. I don't think boundaries have to be overly stringent. Now, in some cases, they may have to be, depending on your relationship with the person and what you need. But I think boundaries are important. And people look at boundaries as a bad word, but it's not. And it's about protecting yourself, because that peace is critical. And so that's what it definitely looks like for me. And also, you know, peace, one of the things can be being in the middle. This is a big one for me, right? So I'm in the middle of working on something and I've been working for a while and I'm like, goodness, I can't figure this out. So I started to get flustered or whatever. And I say, you know what? Just step away. So peace for me could be just stepping away from work and saying, you know what? I'm going to go for a walk, or I'm going to go sit outside, or I'm a bookworm. So I'm going to go and read a book for 20 minutes. That's going to take my mind away from what I'm doing. So it's for me, it's a combination of the boundaries, but then also doing something that I consider to be self-care.
As a, when you think about your childhood, was it easy for you to set boundaries?
No.
Or it was like, do as I tell you to do, and we don't care about what your thoughts are.
Do as I say, not as I do. You didn't really have boundaries. Don't close that door. You know, this is my house. As I got a little bit older, you got to do a few things, but there weren't a lot of boundaries, especially when I was small. And then, you know, you get into the teenage years and you want to set boundaries, but parents are still not having it, at least for a while. So it was tough trying to set boundaries. There really were no boundaries when I was a child. Yeah, that I can see. There were boundaries that were set for me, but not that I necessarily was able to set.
And so when we struggle to set boundaries, what do you think is the emotional windfall from that? Like, what accumulates, or what's the collateral damage?
I think the collateral damage from that is how you interact with other people. Because what happens is, when you're not able to set boundaries as a child, you have a hard time setting boundaries as an adult. You also feel like you may not have the right to say no, which is a huge issue, man or woman. Because a lot of people say, especially for women, and I agree, but man or woman, because men need to say no too sometimes. So I think the emotional windfall from that is feeling like you can't say no, sometimes feeling like you're trapped in a situation and you don't know how to get out of that. And that could be different types of relationship. It could be significant other relationships, but that happens, I see, with a lot of professional relationships. People do not know how to set boundaries when it comes to work. And they overwork themselves, they get sick, they get tired, they don't know how to take vacation. Even though companies are like, oh, you got this vacation. I see that as the emotional windfall, because people will do things to the detriment of their physical health because they haven't set the boundaries, and their physical health suffers. But more importantly, their mental and emotional health suffers because they haven't been able to draw a line in the sand, if you will, between, oh, I wasn't able to set boundaries as a child, but now I can set boundaries as an adult. People struggle with that.
Yeah, what are they afraid of by setting boundaries as an adult? By, you know, hey, I do need a vacation. I will go on vacation.
I think there's a few things. I think there's rejection, especially if it's in a relationship with, let's say you meet somebody that you like and you set a boundary. Some people are scared that if they set that boundary, that person is no longer going to want them. That person is no longer going to like them. That person is no longer going to date them or see them as the beautiful person that they once thought they were if they set that boundary. And they're afraid of losing them. When it comes to work, they're scared about speaking their mind. Oh, you know, I may not get that raise. I may not get that bonus. I may not get that promotion. I may lose my job. you know, they are scared of rejection and fallout from someone else. And then how is that going to make them feel? And they're not used to it. They don't know how it's going to make them feel.
That uncertainty is scary for a lot of people. I mean, like I know I go to the cookies, cakes, and donuts because I know exactly how it's going to make me feel, at least for a few right. minutes. But I always forget about that shame and guilt that comes after it. But at least I know what the cycle is. And setting a boundary, that's exploring a new territory. I don't know how you're going to respond. I don't know how I'm going to respond. And right. I don't know how we're going to respond together. And that's scary. That's a haunted house.
And the problem is the shame and the guilt is unnecessary. So there's no shame that needs to be felt because you set a boundary. There's no guilt that needs to be felt because you set a boundary. Boundaries are protection. And they're protection for your mind, they're protection for your heart, they're protection for your soul. Because if we don't set those boundaries, we are allowing people and ourselves to do us an injustice because we allow people to basically walk all over us. And we allow ourselves to get caught up in these situations and these cycles because it is a cycle. When you don't set a boundary the first time and something happens, you're going to continue to repeat that cycle until you learn the lesson. And so you're dealing with unnecessary pain, but the shame and guilt doesn't have to be there because you're doing it. I think if people flip the way that they're looking at it, Leo, right? If you look at it, I'm setting this boundary because I want to have a better relationship with my brother or my sister, my mom or my significant other or my colleagues at work. That's why I'm setting these boundaries so that we can have a more productive relationship. I think people would feel better and it would be a lot easier.
Yeah, because I think what ends up happening is we are afraid to set the boundary because we don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. We don't want to cause any trouble. You know, earlier you were talking about like when you're going through the options for suicide, you're like, that's going to be too painful. Like we do so much to avoid pain, not realizing that it can cause more pain, more hurt, more damage. And you used a word earlier that was interesting to me, an injustice. Usually when we think about injustice, you know, we see the images in the media. We think about the wars and the conflict that are happening in different parts of the world. But to frame letting someone step over our boundaries repeatedly, the occasional boundary overstep, that's going to happen. If you have kids, they're going to trample all over your boundaries. They come in the bathroom when you in there. They're going to, you know, if you have teenagers, they're going to use your stuff. They might steal right. the car. And
they're going to push the buttons.
They're going to push the buttons, right? But that repeated trampling of your boundaries, of your sovereignty can feel like an injustice. Can you say more to that? I just love that word.
Well, to me, you're not, you know, what is injustice? It's not being fair, right? So you're not being fair to yourself by not setting a boundary and allowing somebody to misuse you, to use you for their own gain. And it can be something as simple as, you know, you're with a significant other and they ask you to drop, hey, my car's in the shop. Can you drop me off at work? Okay, you say yes, not a problem. Car's in the shop the next day. Can you drop me off? Okay. Then the car comes out of the shop and they're back to driving. But next it's, because I had to get the car fixed. I don't have money to put gas in the car. Can you loan me $20? Okay, you loan them the $20. But it builds and it spirals. So it's always something. So now, because you've done one thing for them, they feel like, oh, they're going to do whatever it is for me. And the person doesn't want to set a boundary and say, listen, I know you've been dealing with some stuff, but it's been 6 months. It's been 3 months. It's been 6 months. You keep asking me for this. And what's going on? You're working yourself, but you're not filling up your gas tank. You're not, you know, and you're not doing anything to add to this. I'm always paying for the dates or whatever. And this could be an extreme example, right? But it seemed to start off small. You're doing yourself an injustice by not speaking up, by keeping quiet. Because the freedom, the peace, the true peace is in having the hard conversations. And that's what I had to learn as I matured. I tell people I didn't learn it as I grew up or as I got older. I said, there's a difference. There are older people who are immature. But as I matured, I found that the peace is in having the hard conversations and understanding, listening to understand, not just listening to hear, listening to understand where the other person is coming from and not just being about getting your point across. But you have to set that boundary and help people understand, you know, I'm not just doing this for me, I'm doing it for you. You're doing it for the both of you, honestly, when you set that boundary. Because if you don't, what I have found is that people tend to just hold it all in and eventually they explode. And the relationship is just ruined. Sometimes by the time they explode, there's so much that spews out that there's no coming back from that, right? Because words are like bullets. Once they're spoken, you can't take them back. You can apologize, but once they're out, they're out. But I think that is the beauty of setting boundaries, because I feel like setting boundaries helps to set peace. When you don't set those boundaries and you have no peace, you are doing yourself such an injustice. That's why I use the word injustice, because you're not being fair. But I think it's more than not being fair, because I have found that, okay, it may not be fair that they picked up the recycle on the other street before they picked it up on mine and I've got more recycle. They're going to get here. Okay, that's unfair. Injustice to me is stronger and it means more and it holds more weight and impact. That's why I use that term.
I love it. And it also made me think about why, because you mentioned earlier about if people allow you to overstep their boundaries, at some point they're going to explode. And the inverse is also true, where they might just ghost you. They might leave you, right? Where they hold it in. They don't say that they're upset or resentful about you overstepping their boundaries, about them always letting you use their car and giving you money for gas. They don't say anything. And then all of a sudden, they're gone. They disappeared. They vanished. And then you go, what happened? Right? So it's either they're in your face yelling at you, you get the explosion, or they just completely vanish into thin air and you have no idea why you've been ghosted.
And there's one more.
Oh.
There's one more that I see. So I agree with you. But there's the one where the boundary overstepper stays because they know they can do it. And you continue to allow the boundaries to be overstepped. You don't say anything. You keep doing things. You may say a little bit here and a little bit there, but there's really no power behind it. And what happens is you both stay, but they lose respect for you. You resent them. But the third and biggest one is you lose respect for yourself. And that's a tough one, because when a person loses respect for themselves, I feel like that starts to grow within them and it makes them feel bad. Those are the things. That's when people start to say, well, I'm losing respect. You know, they're not going to say I'm losing respect for myself, but they start to have those feelings of unworthiness. They start to have those feelings of, you know what, this is, you know, maybe I do deserve this. Especially they start to feel like maybe I haven't said anything in 3 months. Can I actually say something now? Yes, you can. But they start to feel that way and say, well, maybe I've kept my mouth closed this long, so I'll just keep my mouth closed. Or, you know, some people it's family, you know, it may not be significant other, it's family, it could be work. And they say they don't say anything. So they resent that other person, but they start to lose respect for themselves. And then it makes it harder for them to just operate, I would say, normally.
Right. They get small. They get contracted. All of a sudden, they don't know what their North Star is. They kind of end up rudderless after a while because they've lost respect for themselves, but they've also lost themselves. Right.
Absolutely.
With no boundaries. You're what are you?
When we just open.
when earlier we talked about and this is off the recording, your experience with infidelity, were these this idea of boundaries and saying no, did these factor into it on any level?
I think somewhat, you know, it happened. It's definitely been a while, but you're younger and you're still trying to figure out life, right? And you're trying to think through things. But I definitely think the boundaries played a part, because as I matured and I looked back on that, and especially as I had, you know, other relationships later, I was like, not so much what didn't I do in that relationship that I need to do in this one, but what did I learn? To me, it's not about what I didn't do. It's what did I learn overall? And then where do I take that learning as I continue to move forward and continue to mature? And for me, it was that sometimes I didn't speak up. Sometimes I didn't set the boundaries. And that did, you know, impact some things. Let's be clear. I'm not making excuses for what they did, but I'm saying that, you know, speaking up definitely would have been better. Setting some different boundaries.
You're taking ownership for your part in it. You're looking at,
yes,
right, because it's the relationship and you're part of that. And it, looking at how I may have contributed to the outcome of the relationship.
Right. So of course the relationship ended, and I was responsible for that because I was like, hey, you know, enough is enough. But I think it is, and like I said, it definitely takes maturity, and it takes being open and honest and looking at those things and having a strong mindset. Because when you have that, I think that you look at things definitely more logically. Look at things more holistically and say, hey, what do I need to do? Because like you said, that taking ownership just could be, you know what, I should have gotten out of this sooner. And maybe I wouldn't be dealing with this. So you're right.
What was the most challenging part about getting out of that relationship? Was it financial? Was it the routine of it all? Was it image? Or was it easy? Were you just like, peace, I'm out?
No, I knew I should have ended it before I did. And it wasn't any of those things that you mentioned. It was just about, you know, caring about the person. And, you know, when you've been with somebody for a little while, you get used to certain things, just being used to the person themselves, you know, the conversations and everything, but you care about the person, their feelings, their well-being. And if there are things that person has gone through that you've been there for, and you know, when things happen, you know, losing parents or losing siblings, losing people that are close to you, you go through that with them. So you know where they are a little bit from an emotional standpoint. So you care about that person. You know, you want to see them happy. You want to see them good. But it definitely, fortunately, had nothing to do with any of the other items that you had. But it's just caring about the person, and then just, you know, like I said, just holding on a little bit too long.
Backtracking a little bit with your friend calling the cops. Mm-hmm. What was the conversation you two had after that? Because I would imagine, you know, she's going off a hunch. She has no idea, about the pills at the time that she calls. She just knows that something is off, and now she's aware of what happened. You know, she's getting a report from you. Are you being more open about what your needs and wants are? Does something change in your relationship? How do you move forward from there in your friendship? How does it change?
So right after that, I actually didn't talk to much of anybody for a good while, to include some family and everything. I found out that she had called another girlfriend, and they had actually called my mom. And my mom was like, they had both called her in tears because they had found out, you know, because when I talked to her, I was just like, I'm so tired of it all. And I think that's what threw her off. I was like, because I was literally exhausted and I was over it. And I pretty much stopped talking to everybody except for one person. And that was my brother. And I was like, I knew why she did what she did. So even though I didn't talk to her for a while, it wasn't because I was angry at her. It's because I didn't want to talk to anybody. And I was at a point, I actually was almost angry at everybody because I was just tired. I just didn't want to deal with anybody. But when I talked to her, I told her, I said, I get it. Because had I been, what I did is I put myself in her shoes. Because had it been me, I would have done the same thing. She was in another state, so it's not like she could come to me. She was hours away. If one of my friends here did that, I would be in the truck on the way to their house. I put myself in her shoes. So I told her, thank you. When I got to that point, I didn't tell her thank you immediately because I still wasn't convinced that I still needed to stick around. Because I was still like, I still need to get out of here because I just was so over it. But eventually I told her, I did tell her I got it, but we sat down and talked and I did tell her thank you and appreciated her and what she did and that it made a big difference. I did appreciate it. At that time, I was just like, you really could have just left me alone. I think that's what I told her at first. I said, you really could have just left me alone. And she was like, no, I couldn't. But I put when I really got myself together, I put myself in her shoes and I told her, thank you.
You talked about the amount of exhaustion you felt. Tired of it all. How were you sleeping up to that point? Insomnia, restless nights, not sleeping enough, waking up in the middle of the night, ruminating thoughts. How has your sleep been for weeks or months or years up to that point?
What was sleep? So I am someone who grew up being able to sleep easily. I would go to sleep one way. My mom would check on me and she would find me upside down in the bed, a totally different way. And I'm asleep, had no clue. I'm a person who had no problem just sleeping through noise, all of this stuff. And when all of this started, sleep just almost evaporated. And it literally almost drove me crazy because I wanted to sleep because I felt like if I could sleep, I could escape. So I did become an insomniac. And I was like, this cannot be real. And for me, it made it worse. It made it worse. Because I wouldn't do anything. I would just be laying there in the bed, in the dark. I'm a bookworm, always have been, but at that point I wasn't really doing anything. I wouldn't get up, I wouldn't read a book, I wouldn't watch TV, nothing. I was just in the bed. And I was just like, oh my God, this is horrible. So my sleep was bad, very bad.
Has that been rectified? Did you figure out what was contributing to the bad sleep?
So much on my mind, so much that I not let go, so much that I just all over the place and being overly tired. You ever been so tired that you just can't go to sleep? So I was I was overly tired all the time. And like I said, for people who have never experienced that, I wouldn't wish it on anybody, but I'll tell anybody, mental and emotional exhaustion is 10 times worse than physical exhaustion. Because physical exhaustion, you can just rectify with sleep. Mental and emotional, that takes work. Work in order to get past that. So it definitely got better once I started to get things together. And the way I started getting things together, therapy was a huge part of it because I had to talk to somebody, but I still had a lot of sleepless nights at first, a lot of crying myself to sleep. for me at the time, I finally, you know, I had to have some conversations with God. That was me. I had to do some screaming. I had to do a lot. But as far as sleeping now, I mean, I'm a night owl, so I'm usually up late. But when I'm out, I'm out. And I take naps.
What I love and what you shared so far is that conversations, excuse me, I have a little phlegm. Conversations seem to have saved your life on so many different levels. The conversation with your best friend, the conversation with God, the conversation with a therapist. Because I was going to ask you, you know, why did you stick around? I mean, the cops left. You probably still got the pills, or you had access to go get more pills. Like, you know, you could have got right back to it.
All the things. I could have. And, you know, it's interesting. I would say that there are a couple of reasons. And yes, the conversations did save my life. The therapist, this was the second therapist, because I went to one therapist and I had one session with her, and I knew that she was not the right one, because she started trying to get me to be her therapist. And I was like, wait, I can't. And I left, and I was pretty practically in tears, because I was still so emotionally vulnerable, you know, at that time. And I was hurting and in pain emotionally. And I was like, this is not gonna work. And I said, but if I don't talk to somebody and figure some of this out, this is going to happen again. And it's going to be successful. So I did some praying, and I found a therapist, and she was amazing. The biggest reason, and I'll tell anybody, you know, the biggest reason, honestly, that I am still here is because I have a purpose. And I think it's important to find that purpose. But, you know, God just said, not yet. I am not a holy roller. You know, I don't argue with people about church and religion and the stuff that they believe. I don't consider myself religious, but I consider myself spiritual. And to me, that means a personal relationship with God. And everybody has to look at what that means for them. And after having some literal conversations, even where he talked back and I was mad and I was upset, he was like, you know, it's not your time yet. And I've got stuff for you to do. And I'm going to, you know, this is going to be used for good. And I'm like, I don't know what you want. You know, I mean, yes, yeah, God, but I don't know what you want. But what good is going to come from this? Years later, I found out and figured out. Because my thing is suicide prevention, helping save lives and everything, because I know what it's like to be in that dark place. So it was tough at first, because I was like, I cannot do this. I think a big part of what helped to save me too is honesty. I was finally honest about everything, and I was honest with God. Like, I was like, I'm mad at you. I can't believe this. But I had to, once again, take ownership of what I had done or what I had not done in order to get me to that place. So all of that played in it, but it is bigger than me. It really is. You hear people say that. But until you experience it yourself, you just don't know. So I'm definitely still here and working on that, because I'm like, there are other people out there who are either going through something similar, who have been through something similar, and they're trying to, you know, figure it out. So my goal is to use my experience to help other people, to help prevent suicide, and then help them understand how to not just survive, but to survive, but to move past survival, to actually living a full life, because it can be done. And I know, because I'm doing it.
Yeah, as the chief empowerment officer of the motivating factor, break down for me that difference between survival and thriving, right? What's the difference between surviving and thriving?
So a person can have suicide ideation or suicidal attempts, but they survive them, right? Whatever that looks like. you survive, you live your life, maybe you get a job, you get a place to live, you get up, wash up, eat breakfast, go to work, lunch, come home, dinner, TV, bed, and repeat the cycle 5 days a week. And then on the weekends, you get up, clean up the house, eat, watch TV, go to bed. It's just a repetitive cycle. You are literally surviving. But what about that is thriving for a person? Whereas to me, thriving means you are living, you are experiencing life. If you are just surviving, if you're just moving through your day, prime example, when this first happened to me and as I was surviving, I literally was going through the motions of just being alive. I was going to work. I was going through the motions of getting dressed. I was going through the motions of eating when I would eat. I was going through the motions of sleeping when I could sleep. But I was just going through the motions of living life. I'm okay. I'm here. There's nothing. But once I got past that, like I said, through therapy and other things, I was like, okay, there's more to life than doing this. It's about going out, not going out with friends. It's about traveling. It's about experiencing the world. But the biggest part, moving from surviving and thriving, is the happiness that it brings you. It's not, it's the peace too, because if you're just surviving, when I was just surviving, I did not feel peaceful. I didn't feel settled. I didn't feel content. I didn't feel happy. I was like, I'm here, but okay. It's just like, okay. But then when I moved into thriving mode, I was happy. I was peaceful. I felt like I could move on versus running away, because I was ready to leave, you know, where I was living. And I realized, well, I couldn't go. That was one of those God things. He was like, you can't leave because you'll be running away. But once I finally got into that mode of, you know what, there is more to life than just going through these motions, then I was able to move forward. So that thriving is being able, not running away, but moving forward, experiencing life, knowing, okay, you didn't finish your degree before, but you know what? You want to finish your degree now? Surviving means I still can't finish that degree. Thriving means, you know what? I'm going back to get that degree. Not only am I going to get that degree, I'm going to get that degree and I'm going to graduate summa cum laude of the class. Or even if you don't, but I'm going to get that degree and I'm getting it for me. It's about living life and having the peace that you want and deserve and having that fullness of life, whatever that looks like for you. Because that fullness of life doesn't have to be material. A lot of people are like, oh, she's talking about getting money, driving cars, getting a house. No, because material things can all be taken away. I'm talking about a thriving life that gives you that peace and that happiness, whatever that looks like.
Absolutely. I love that, that idea of surviving is, when I think about surviving, I also think about like a numbness, you know, it's like you're working a factory line and you're doing the same motion over and over again. And there's no room for growth or excitement or experience anything new and thriving. You're actually kind of challenging and surprising yourself as you're moving forward towards something. You've mentioned a few times that, you know, you like books, you're a bibliophile. Is there a nonfiction book? Or no, not nonfiction. Is there a fiction book, right? Is there a fiction? Because there's so many nonfictions, and I feel like they get redundant after a while. But is there a fiction book? Is there a story that you were like, this spoke to me?
Wow, there are quite a few. And I'm mostly a fiction reader because my life is so nonfiction that I read a lot of fiction. And I like different types of stuff. I like the mysteries and thrillers, but there is a fiction book that is actually my favorite book. It is The Shack by William Paul Young. And the book is about a man's encounter with God. And nobody could have told me that this would become my favorite book. Cause I was like, oh goodness, you know, at first, because like I said, I believe in God, but it's not about religion to me. I think a lot of people focus so much on religion that they lose sight of everything else. But this book, just the encounter and it's not God in the traditional form. So the conversations, it's like how you and I are talking. That's how the conversations took place in the book. And it helps, it helped me think about a lot of things in life. The book is absolutely amazing. It is my favorite book. I have gifted people with the book. There's also a movie, and Octavia Spencer, who's a great actress, stars in the movie. And the movie is absolutely, the movie is beautiful too. But that book spoke to me on so many different levels. I think everybody should read it at least once, because I think at some point in the book, you can put yourself in there or take that conversation. There are so many different conversations that you can put yourself into, and you can even change the situation that led up to it. You can change what the situational scenario is, but you can still put yourself in it. You know, whether it's the conversation between the husband and the wife, with the other children, the conversations with God, the other conversation, it's just the conversations with yourself. It's an amazing book.
Penultimate question. Actually, not penultimate question. Third to last question. If someone is wanting to work with you, what would that look like for them? What does it look like to work with the chief empowerment officer at The Motivating Factor?
So I am a keynote speaker and an MC. So it depends on what they need. So with being a keynote speaker, I have three main keynotes that I work with. And I'm talking about, you know, big one, suicide prevention. And then there's the one, and they, you know, really build on each other. But it's, hey, yes, you survived, but now what? Let me help you. Let me give you some steps so you can build on that. And so you can move towards the, you know, the thriving life. And then helping you to think beyond just the here and now is the last one. So there's that if people want to hire me to be a keynote speaker, or if they want to hire me to be a workshop facilitator. I actually have a framework and use that one more for corporates and executives, but it can be used on a couple of different levels to really walk people through kind of leadership development, but it's empowering them. You know, they say stuff starts from the top. It's even like parents, but it trickles down. So helping leadership to understand how to empower themselves, but how to empower their employees to motivate themselves, and making sure that as executives, they're taking care of themselves too, because that is a scary population where we're unfortunately having and seeing a lot of suicide and suicidal ideation as well. So really working with them through that, or I can MC your event. I have a lot of energy. I have MC'd wedding receptions. I have MC'd military events, just a lot of different things. And the thing is, you want somebody who's going to give you energy and is going to either keep the crowd hyped up, or if you need to calm the crowd calm, you want somebody who still is going to be professional and deliver, because, you know, military is a little bit different. So I've done all of that. So I do any of those three items.
I love it. And then we'll link to all that in the show notes in terms of how to find you and your website. Penultimate question. Always imagine there's one person listening in who may be on the precipice of wanting to end their life. Before you kill yourself, what would you say to them, Arnita?
The first thing I would say is two words: you matter. The next is, not only do you matter, but your life matters. And there is someone somewhere in this world who needs what you have. So we need you to survive. And if you are listening and you are thinking about it, what I want you to understand is a permanent solution is never the answer for a temporary problem. And whatever you're going through, no matter how much it hurts, it is temporary. And I am a living, breathing, walking, talking example of it can, it will, it does get better. It takes time. I'm not going to sit here and say it doesn't hurt, but it can. And please talk to someone if you are feeling like you can't deal with it anymore. I don't care who that person, whether you call the suicide hotline, if you feel like you need to go to the hospital and check yourself in, talk to someone so that you can get some help, because your life truly does matter.
Last question. What are you looking forward to in the next 24 hours?
What am I looking forward to in the next 24 hours? Wow. So this is Wednesday. This is the last day of January. I am looking forward to a couple. I'm looking forward to enjoying the sunshine that we have here today, because it's been cold, but now it's warm. It's 73 degrees here today. So I'm excited. And I'm looking forward to talking to a couple of friends tonight, catching up with a couple of people. And I don't know, maybe watching a movie. So the stuff for me is simple right now.
I love it. That's the Holy Trinity right there. Some sun, conversations with friends, a movie. Yeah. That'll tuck me in. Arnita, this was awesome. Thank you for joining me. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Remember, this podcast is not a substitute for you calling the 988 or any of the other 800 numbers listed in all of the show notes. You can chat, talk, text. You can go to thrivewithleo.com for one-on-one coaching with yours truly. Let's get to tomorrow together. Thank you so much, Arnita.